Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archives.
Media Network, Radio Netherlands Weekly Communications Review with Jonathan Marks.
A lot in the way of satellite radio news this week. We solve a digital mystery and examine some potential hoaxes. But first, news about this station, Radio Netherlands. 2 years ago, we mentioned a fact-finding survey that we were conducting in East Asia. After extensive planning, fieldwork was carried out in September and October of 1987 and February and March of this year. Research focused on ways in which reception of Radio Netherlands could be improved in Japan, China, Indonesia, Korea, and the Philippines. Last week, the results of the investigation were sent to the Dutch government. Jim Vastenhout is the technical advisor to Radio Netherlands management and one of the co-authors of the paper, so I asked him to outline the details.
We are talking about a shortwave relay station. The survey was set up to check on reception conditions in the area. We had the feeling that due to numerous new transmitters into the area, on Saipan, on Taiwan, on Guam, etc., we were losing foot in East Asia, let's say roughly the area north of Singapore and south of Seoul.
The survey also examined the competing media. In China, there's a terrific growth in television, for instance, and Japan is already suffering from a form of media overkill. Still, figures for shortwave listening in the region still make the considerable investment needed for a shortwave relay an interesting proposition. But where would we put it?
We have calculated on propagation formula what possible areas could be the best for the station. We have visited 5 countries, starting west to east, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Singapore, Brunei and the Philippines. Unfortunately, we have to let go 2 countries. Sri Lanka is not suitable because there's a drain of engineers into the Middle East, which means that you cannot properly operate a station with local engineers. That's a great disadvantage. Otherwise, it would be a nice position. Singapore has the disadvantage that there's a limit on tower heights for antennas.
Because it's a small place, obviously.
It's a small place. There's a lot of airline activity in the area. And there's a lot of communications business in the area also. I mean, and they have a very limited amount of land. And even the BBC relay station suffers from, let's say, the lack of height of antenna towers.
That leaves Brunei, the Philippines and Thailand as possible sites. But let me stress, there is a difference between this fact-finding study just completed and the final go-ahead to commence construction. As always, money is the problem that still has to be discussed with the Dutch Ministry of Culture.
So if you want to build up an audience in the area, the general area of East Asia, you need a relay station there because otherwise you lose your listeners every 6 months.
Is there also a problem in the coverage of the shortwave receivers, bearing in mind that if you're broadcasting directly from a transmitter site in Europe or Madagascar, you'd have to use higher frequencies, which may not even be on the set?
That is right for a number of countries, especially Indonesia. For China, where we have done extensive research into receivers, it is not true. Most receivers, about 72%, if I recall well, have shortwave between 6 and 18 megahertz. 49 to 16 meters, and 25% have the 13 meter band, 21 megs. If we ever decide to cover China, we will have a tremendous possible audience.
Radio Netherlands. We're not number one. You are.
Building one's own relay station is one solution. There are others. Swiss Radio International and Spanish Foreign Radio, for instance, both swap programs with Radio Beijing in China. All you need for that is a satellite link between Europe and Asia. Or you can simply buy time on another station's transmitters.
We have checked on renting airtime. and very little is available at this time. Also, not in the correct direction that we want to. The second option is to exchange a relatively expensive solution. If you think about when you have 2 hours per day for exchange, you need to rent 24 hours of satellite capacity.
You can't just say, I want to hire the satellite between 1 and 3.
No, there's no possibility for that. By law, it is not possible for a foreign broadcaster to use a Dutch transmitter on our soil. That is indeed a grave problem that is still under discussion with our government if that can be changed. Then the third possibility, of course, is to have a relay station together with another broadcaster. That is still under consideration. We hope that we can find a colleague to do something together, which doesn't necessarily mean that the thing will be much cheaper. But operation, of course, is much more interesting, and you have spare capacity in that respect.
In the same way that Deutsche Welle and the BBC share the Antigua relay
right.
station.
Right, and we have followed that cooperation very closely. It works, and it means that it could work in other conditions also. And, of course, the last possibility is to build a relatively small, let's say, two-transmitter station ourselves. And, well, we still have three of the four options open for consideration.
Jim Vastenhout of Radio Netherlands. From the future now to the recent past, several letters have arrived asking us to explain this station identification.
This is WRTH Global DX Radio on 1488, broadcasting from the Good Vessel Communicator. WRTH is owned and operated by Hoax Limited, New Amsterdam. We plan to operate round the clock, bringing you all the latest DX news from all around the globe. We shall rebroadcast Jonathan Mark's famous Shortwave Panorama, Glenn Hauser's DX Party Line, George Wood with his fabulous media network, and lots more. Reception reports for this test transmission are most welcome if you include 15 international reply coupons.
Oh, really? Well, not as you might think, a new medium-wave transmitter from somewhere in the North Sea, but in fact an April Fool hoax. The ingenious perpetrator was Radio Austria International's German-language media programme. The various mistakes and expensive verification cards should have given you the clue, but evidently some people thought it wise to drop us a line to have us check it out, especially that Amsterdam connection. Another hoax was printed in an Amsterdam radio and TV guide explaining that SAR radio would start broadcasting during the summer on 14715 kHz, starting as from tomorrow at 0430 UTC. Well, you can listen round if you like. I shouldn't bother. Now back to real radio, and we take you to an unusual antenna mast just north of Cincinnati, Ohio, USA.
Good morning, North America. From the Hudson Bay
to the Florida Keys,
from the Empire State
to the Golden Gate,
this is
Interstate 700.
Breaker 19, we're convoy for the Bozoo.
The 50,000 watt clear channel voice of the American trucker, 700 WLW.
I love you, Bozo.
Trucking Bozo.
WLW still has an unusual antenna mast consisting of two medium wave masts, one on top of another, to form a kind of delta shape. During the Second World War, no less than 500 kilowatts was pumped out on medium wave from that station in Mason, Ohio, partly in the hope of reaching Europe with the American message. The owners built a shortwave radio station close by, and although it was taken over later by the Voice of America, it retained its call sign for a while. If you switched on your radio 30 years ago today, you might have found this.
This is the Voice of America radio station, WLWO, in Mason, Ohio, operated by the Crosley Broadcasting Corporation, signing on.
A case of a private company running a transmitter site on behalf of the Federal Government External Radio Service. But what about the other way around? 2 days ago, we received a press release from NDXE in Opelika, Alabama, USA. As you may know, they've been trying to start a shortwave commercial service for several years. Despite enormous publicity, nothing much has eventuated. Now they say they've approached the Voice of America to use a recently deactivated VOA transmitter site in California. John Schramm is the financial consultant to NDXE, and on the line from New York, we asked him to clarify what they're up to.
Well, the way we'd expect it would work is that their maintenance people would oversee the operation and it would come on in periodically, and that we would just keep the equipment warm and put broadcasting through with a small staff of our own. The two groups would be working side by side.
But what's the interest from VOA's point of view? I mean, you paying them to use it?
Sure.
We then rang the VOA engineering department in Washington, D.C. They told us that the Dixon station in California has indeed been placed into an inactive status because of budgetary reasons. But at this moment, there were no plans to dismantle or dispose of the transmitter site or operate it under any other arrangement. Now, Dorothy Weirs has more news.
Well, Jonathan, you may recall our coverage of the great transpolar ski trek expedition a few weeks ago. A combined team of Soviet and Canadian skiers set off in March with the aim of skiing over the North Pole and using amateur radio as their means of contact with support teams. Well, on Wednesday, June the 1st, the mission came to a successful conclusion as the 13 skiers stepped ashore onto Ward Hunt Island. That's a tiny piece of land off the coast of Cape Columbia in Canada. The last days on the ice were rather frustrating for the skiers. They were told that a 10-kilometre-wide lead of open water lay ahead of them and that a special airdrop of rafts might be necessary. But, in fact, temperatures dropped to minus 14 degrees centigrade and the water froze enough for the team to skate, zigzagging to avoid the many pools of open water. The skiers are now in Ottawa for debriefing, family reunions and well-deserved celebrations.
Radio Netherlands. First from Europe.
A faulty flight computer on the Ariane 4 launcher has delayed its debut flight until Wednesday of next week, that's June the 15th. The five-day delay is currently thought to be adequate to replace the ailing flight computer, but a decision on any additional scheduled delay will only come after a further review later on today. Meanwhile, the amateur radio Phase 3 satellite is in excellent condition on its perch, nearly 55 metres above the pad at the ESA French Guiana Space Centre in Kourou. The telemetry stream is being monitored by a joint team of American and West German amateurs, and they indicate that all is well with the spacecraft. Phase 3 is to become known as AMSAT Oscar 13 after its insertion into orbit and successful deployment. The launch windows for June the 15th are thought to be between 11:12 and 12:09 UTC, and if the rocket doesn't go off then, they can try again between 13:32 and 14:46 UTC. When it comes, the launch will be viewed by a very large potential audience, large for an unmanned launch, that is. That's because C-SPAN, the cable satellite public affairs network, will broadcast the launch live, available on some 2,900 cable systems across the United States. You can also follow the launch on shortwave if you have a receiver capable of single sideband reception. Pat Gowan of AMSAT Europe is here now with a reminder of the frequencies.
There'll be a big launch network on all the amateur bands broadcasting the launch from an hour before takeoff right through till the satellite is ejected and we hear the first signals. That will be on 14.280 megahertz, on the American Radio Relay League networks, on 21.280, and if the band is open, on 28.580 megahertz. So everybody around the world should be able to hear the launch and the success, or if I dare say it, otherwise, of our new satellite.
Thanks, Pat. Now let's see what the professionals are up to in the satellite radio business. Radio Nova. A group called Radio Nova have been on the air since last month from a studio in Surrey, England. The programme is contemporary rock music 24 hours a day, and the signal goes up to a satellite where it's available to anyone who's interested. So far, some independent local radio stations in Britain have said they might use the new service as a way of filling up the nighttime hours. Radio Nova survives on its advertising revenue. Apart from a few British cable systems, though, the programmes are also being heard on a cable system in Bergen, Norway. Sybil Fennell is one of the directors of the new satellite radio station, so is Britain their main market?
That was not our original intention. That's something that's evolved as things have progressed. We started off looking basically at the cable and satellite market with a view to providing programs to whoever wished to take them, because we don't charge for our service at any stage. So we started off with the cable nets in Bergen and Windsor and Greenwich here in England. All our programming is in English, and all our time checks are in English, and we do make mention of the fact that we are aimed primarily at people in Britain and British people living abroad, of which there are many hundreds of thousands.
Time checks in English. Well, anyway, for those with a satellite dish, what are the details?
We use Intelsat VAF11. We're on transponder number 63. We broadcast in stereo using Wegner Panda 1, and our audio subcarrier frequencies are 7.38 and 7.56 megahertz. We're on the back of the BBC scrambled television transmission.
That's the one that's beamed to Denmark, is it?
That's correct. It's aimed at the Scandinavian countries.
With our small receiving antenna here in Hilversum, you do get a lot of hiss with the music. But cable companies with better equipment get better results.
From the UK,
via Intelsat VAF11,
this is the sound of Europe.
An over-the-air situation is coming up in Paris and France. That's going to be our first over-the-air situation, where we'll be rebroadcast on FM by one of the French networks. We're hoping that will start before the 10th of June.
Ah, but what about the competition? Cable One is a satellite radio station operating 24 hours and based here in Hilversum, Holland. There's another one called Radio Tien in Amsterdam. And in Germany, a service called Starsat has had some success feeding their local radio stations. And then Virgin Records in London will start their satellite radio service next month. That's called Radio Radio. So the idea of satellite radio isn't new.
Well, that's totally different. I mean, Cable One was on before we were, so obviously we paid a lot of attention to what they were doing. And to my mind, they're very much a cable station. They sound like a cable radio station. Our whole aim in life is to sound like a radio station. Nothing to do with the cable, but just a good, powerful, all-hit music radio station with more music and less talk 24 hours a day. We describe it as hamburger radio. If you go into McDonald's anywhere in the world, you know the menu is going to be identical. The food will taste the same. It's the same technology or the same principle that we've applied to our programming. Whether you tune in at 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the evening, mid-afternoon, or whatever, you'll always hear the same hot-hit format. And I believe that makes us rather different from Cable One. They've gone up a road of a lot of oldies and quite a slow pace. We're very fast, very rocky, very Chicago style.
Hamburger radio, eh? Maybe we should revive these sort of slogans.
Media Network, the program with more meat than the 20-piece chicken McNuggets.
Maybe not, though. Now this.
This is Sky.
Yesterday, media entrepreneur Rupert Murdoch, chairman of News International and director of Sky Channel, announced a major expansion program. They've just signed a 10-year lease with British Telecom in Britain to run 3 television channels, with an option for a 4th channel, on the medium-powered Astra satellite. That's due for launch in November of this year. One TV channel will consist of the existing Sky Channel, General Entertainment. A second, called Sky News, will carry a 24-hour news service. Sky Movies will run 18 hours of movies a day to Britain only. And possibly a 4th channel will carry a sports service. There's a radio service called, you guessed it, Sky Radio, which will originate from Holland. Two major announcements followed in the press conference. Alan Sugar, who heads the computer company of Amstrad Electronics, said he would be providing a home receiver and a 60-centimetre satellite dish for £199 sterling. He would be producing 100,000 dishes a month by the first quarter of next year. And secondly, all the Sky television services will use the ordinary PAL colour TV system, and not the much-hailed improved quality Mac system that rival companies have announced. Clearly, Rupert Murdoch is keen to get people watching on existing home televisions without going to a lot of extra expense.
Sky News Channel will be a 24-hour channel, modelled very much in the American CNN. The great difference will be that it will be a British channel, and it will be done here in London. The Sky Movie Channel, which will be starting at the same time, will have one major difference from other movie channels. It will be free to the viewers and supported by advertising.
The voice of Rupert Murdoch at the press conference yesterday. Now to Radio Netherlands answer line, Hilversum 18700.
Hello, Jonathan. My name is Jay Spell, and I'm calling from Nashville, Tennessee in the U.S. On a recent trip to Europe, a strange signal kept following me around all over Germany and Switzerland in Holland, usually in AM, but occasionally in FM, and always on approximately 87.35 megahertz, except in Munich, I also found it on 38.27. It usually sounded like this. Except in Holland, where I recorded this bit at Schiphol Airport. That one actually seemed to be some sort of diversity transmission, obviously data of some sort, but of what nature, Jonathan, and directed to whom? And speaking of which, I found it most ironic that the complaint you had concerning too many lengthy and in-depth features originated with the sponsors of an event on which you did a wonderfully informative and in-depth feature. Could you park me, Jonathan, over there with that large group of listeners who would never miss the program? Yeah, over there.
Okay, we'll do that with pleasure. Thanks for the call, Jay. Glad you liked last week's coverage of the EDXE conference in Antwerp. As for that noise, well, the answer is it's a national paging system. If you need to be in touch with the home or office, and you're moving around anywhere in the Benelux, you can buy a bleeper from the PTT, not much larger than a fountain pen. It costs about $200. Then, for an extra $8 a month, they connect you to the paging system. For example, say I'm out in the car on the way to Amsterdam. All you have to do is to call a special telephone number. Now, all the personal bleepers in the Benelux are listening to the same FM frequency, to a stream of tones. The bleeper in my pocket is simply programmed to react when it hears a certain sequence of tones. It's like an electronic key fitting into a slot. About 15 seconds after calling that number, the bleeper reacts. Each bleeper is assigned four special telephone numbers, and the unit gives a different number of beeps depending on which number is dialed. So if the unit starts bleeping four times, you know you have to call home. Three times, maybe you have to call the office, and so on. In Germany, the idea is the same, but the tone sequences are different. In the long term, European PTTs want to try and standardise their paging systems so that they'll work right across this continent. But that'll be some time yet.
Media Network with twice as much information. Which is basically true since you're the longest show on the air at the moment.
Thank you. Now to Arthur Cushion in New Zealand with tuning suggestions from the Pacific region. And it appears that the winter nights over there are bringing in some excellent signals on medium wave.
The price catch is WVWI, American Virgin Islands. 1,000 kilohertz, 1 kilowatt, closing at 0405 UTC on a Monday. Another good signal has been from Honduras, HRVC, on 1,400 kilohertz at 0430 on Monday in English. And from Argentine, signals have been noted on 590, 670 and 680, all around 0500 UTC. Moving to shortwave and the 13 megahertz band, signals noted include 13610, Radio Berlin International in English at 0500 to Africa, and on 13685, Swiss Radio 0830, 0900 in English to Australia. Guam, Pacific DX magazine has been retimed for listeners in Australia, now broadcast on Saturday at 1000 UTC on 11805 kHz. There's a broadcast on Sunday for Japan at 0845 UTC, still on 11805 kHz, and here's the typical station announcement.
From Trans World Radio Pacific on the island of Guam, this is Pacific DX Magazine.
That was Pacific DX Magazine from Guam, KTWR, 11805 on a Saturday at 1000 UTC for listeners in Australia and New Zealand. Radio Japan is now broadcasting Larry Magni's interesting receiver reviews. They're heard at 0925, and the broadcasts are on 11840 and 17810 kilohertz, and the next transmission is on June the 12th. Kiribati, and signals have been noted in English from 0600 to 0700, and the frequency is 14803 kilohertz. From Saipan, and KYOI has reduced its transmissions to 22 hours a day. The change is 1800 to 2200, and that's heard on 9495, replacing 9670 kilohertz. Vanuatu, the transmission in English for listeners Monday to Friday is 0900 to 0915. The broadcasts are carried on the three frequencies, on medium wave 1125, and on shortwave, they're on 3945 and 7260 kHz. Radio Vanuatu has been off the air for some days in mid-May, but has returned to shortwave. USA, WMLK Bethel, heard between 0400 and 0700 UTC in English on 9465, replacing the old channel of 9455 kHz. Voice of America transmission retimed for this area now has the Communication World program broadcast on a Saturday at 1010 UTC. VOA is using several channels, but 5985 gives the best reception.
Thanks, Arthur. Now to computer bulletin boards, and the Association of North American Radio Clubs, ANARC, has a new system which goes online as from the first week of next month. Executive Secretary Bob Horvitz gave me the background.
Bill Krause has been using a very low-budget system for all these years, and it's not really able to support the kind of services we would like to be able to offer. And he's been disappointed in the support that his system has gotten. And he took it offline a few weeks ago. And we've talked to a number of other bulletin board operators, and I'm very happy to announce that Kirk Baxter, who's the system operator of the ACE bulletin board, located in the central part of the U.S., has agreed to rename and reconfigure his bulletin board, and sometime in the next week or two, there will be a name change, and regular callers will find themselves confronted by the ANARC bulletin board. But more important than the name change is some of the software changes we're hoping to introduce. Kirk has a lot of capacity on his system, much more than has ever been used by the ACE board, and what we're trying to do is to figure out a way to use his software, which is very flexible, to set up private conferences for each of our clubs or any of the clubs that wish to make use of this capability. And this could be used by the officers of the club or the editors of the club for private discussions of matters of common interest. The other important capability would be to have a space so that the editors of different columns in club bulletins could upload their column if they produce it on a computer, and increasingly they all are, and have it downloaded by the person with the best printer. And this would give a higher graphic appearance to the newsletter and perhaps more of a uniform character to it, which would make it more pleasing to somebody seeing it who might not be familiar with the content, and just looking at it as a visual product, they might find it more satisfying.
Currently, the number of the ACE bulletin board in the United States is area code 913, then 677-1288. That's 913-677-1288. And that's up until June the 20th. After that date, the bulletin board goes offline as it's being moved, and we'll pass on the new number as soon as we get it. That's it for now. More space and technology news in Research File on Monday. Join me then.
Input on our output to Media Network, Box 222, Hilversum, the Netherlands. Or call the 24-hour answer line, Hilversum, 18700.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
Hi.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network program. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.